Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all. Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Even though the Miami Marlins have been officially eliminated from contention, this is a team that's playing really well. These teams at the end of the year need to find motivation. They got plenty of motivation in knocking the Mets out. They are not laying down in any way. So, yeah, I mean, it's the same story. What will happen with these starters after Sproat? I mean, it feels like a must-win tonight, even though it's technically not a must-win, but it feels like a must-win tonight with Sproat, with what we don't know is going to happen on the mound Saturday and Sunday.
Man, I'm telling you, if they lose this, again, it goes back to the biggest financial disaster in professional sports, really, because they haven't had that many injuries. I mean, for the most part, they have been healthy and they have been, you know, they've been solid all year long. It's just that their starting pitching has hit the wall. Their trade acquisitions haven't worked out the way that the Yankees trades acquisitions have worked out. And, you know, if they don't make it, man, it is an unmitigated disaster.
Yeah, I as far as payroll goes, it's a financial disaster. I mean, I think that they probably, I mean, this year they had an attendance record. I know that they've, you know, the Soto thing got them a lot of juice, but as far as spending money on a baseball team to perform and it not performing, yeah, it's got to be the worst of all time.
You can say whatever you want about the Dodgers and the Yankees spending a lot of money on their teams, but their teams make it to the playoffs. The Mets spent $421 million, that's including taxes and everything else, on this roster. And if it doesn't make it, it really, you know, and even though they won last night, we sit here, we're happy they won. We're happy that they're going into the last weekend. They have a chance to make it to the playoffs. But let's be realistic about what we're watching. You know, we're watching, you know, older pitchers that have basically hit the wall here at the end of the season.
And you're watching this happen?
Yeah, we're watching it happen, yes.
Let's go to Matt in New Jersey. What's going on, Matt?
Hey, guys. Good morning. How you doing?
Good, Matt. What's up?
Good. Excited for the golf this weekend. But I had a question about the NFL, and really just want your takes. I think between the new kickoff rule and the kickers hitting field goals now regularly over 50, even 60, that when you get in these late game situations in particular, the field is just too short.
Yeah.
Now, I know it was the Arizona kicker's fault last night for missing it short of the target zone. But at the end of the day, Seattle needs, what, 15, 20 yards tops with one timeout, 20 seconds.
You almost think it's inevitable they're going to go win. And you know there's going to be a penalty flag somewhere. On somebody, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to say this. That kicker screwed up last night. But one thing I do like about what is going on this year is I like the fact that we're getting more returns than we did at any time last year. I mean, we are getting a lot of returns, which I think is an exciting part of the game.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, I mean, I thought Matt would have more there, but he did not.
Don't you agree? Like last year, yes. He was kicking, you know, it's the end zone. Everybody's getting a ball into 30.
It has certainly worked so far this year, but with the kickers and the strong legs at this point, I mean, he's right about that. It's almost like at the end of these halves and the end of these games, like if you're starting on the 30 or 40-yard line, it's like two passes and you got a guy who can kick a 65-yard field goal.
We got to remember he also missed the field goal right prior to that.
True, yeah.
So, I mean, it does, you know, they do miss, and that last one was knuckling through, you know?
Yeah. I think kickers are more important in 2025 than they ever have been in the NFL because they're such a weapon and they can kick these monster field goals. I mean, that is like, you know, back in the day, a 60-yard field goal, there was like one guy who did it and Jason Elam. And that was it. And that record held for I don't know how long. And now you've got guys doing it every week.
Well, yeah, you also had McManus out in Denver too, right?
Brandon McManus would always kick long ones, and then but you know, it, obviously the elevation had something to do with that. Yeah, but I mean, it's just a such a weapon. So it looks like Justin Thomas is tearing up a little bit on the tee box. So that is it's an emotional situation, and they came out Bryson DeChambeau and JT with the American flag draped around their shoulders. And Rahm and Hatton came out and got to a ton of boos. You could see the fans that were screaming at him. So
I mean, it's lined, man. It is packed.
Every golfer always says that their most nervous they ever are is the ones who played in the Ryder Cup, is the first tee shot at the Ryder Cup. They're never more nervous than that.
I've watched you now. How many rounds of golf have you and I played together?
50 to 60.
I always feel like that's your nervous spot.
Yeah.
Depending on where we're playing and what's happening around the first tee.
Yeah, without a doubt. No, you're right. I can't argue that. It takes me a while to get into it.
One time we were playing, and I really can't discuss the course, but man, you almost decapitated somebody.
I did.
And then I said, well, hit another one. And you're like, no.
I'm not going to, because I'll actually kill the guy this time.
Okay.
I almost killed him the first time. I'll actually kill him the second time. But to be fair about that day, you didn't help with the things you were saying. You know, we first get there, unfortunately, you tell me a very bad news about something.
Yes.
Right before we tee off. And then right after that.
Ooh, bad shot by John Rahm.
People are cheering that it disappeared in the rough. And then right after that, we're going over the handicaps, and the guy goes, oh, so.
Is the naked cowboy out there? He's got to be out there, right?
You're going over the handicaps. You go, well, Gio gets 7. You go, no, we're going to give him 9. And the guy goes, why are you going to give him 9? He goes, because I know how much he sucks. That's what you said.
Well, I was trying to get you riled up.
Yeah, riled up. You got me riled up. My hands were shaking. I almost killed a guy.
All right, here comes Bryson DeChambeau's first tee shot. He actually hit 579 practice balls.
I saw that. More than anybody
that's
out there.
What do you think? Does he put it on?
Well, it's going that way.
It is going that way. Here it comes.
Where does it land? Is it in the fairway? I can't see. Is it
on
the green?
The green?
Is it? I can't. Oh, no, just short of the green. That's a great shot. Chris at Tom's River. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, guys. I love you. I love your show. It's just first time calling into any radio show.
All right, Chris. Well, welcome.
I just, the whole boomer with the Mets with no injury thing. I mean,
injuries. Come on.
Light injuries. The whole pitching staff has been out the whole year. Manaea was on the shelf. Montos was on the shelf for the first half of the season. Senger's been out for half the season.
I think what he meant was Soto, Alonso, Lindor. Those guys.
And by the way, all these other guys, these pitchers you're talking about, have all been back here for the second half of the season.
McGill, Canning.
Miguel's out. Minter was
a setup man. $10 million a year setup man. That's all I'm saying. I'm not giving them any excuses, but they do have a lot of injuries in that pitching staff.
Yeah, I mean, you know what almost feels like was like a turning point in the season? And tell me if this is fair or not. Is the Kodai Senga injury when Pete Alonso threw that ball up to him and he pulled his hamstring.
When Pete was going through his issues in the middle of the season,
I feel like that was the first time it was like, oh, like that's weird, that stinks, and you know, it was everything was going well. And remember, we had that caller right before that who said the Mets have too many good pitchers.
Yes.
What are you going to do?
And I felt like we were going down the path that we went back down in September of 2007 because we said the same thing. You know, we also said, wow. You know, this is going to be, you know, what a pitching staff, and we're locked and loaded. They're set up. This is going to be a great run.
I feel like that was it.
Yes.
That was like the first thing. And we got too many good pitchers. What are we going to do? Pete Alonso gets the yips, throws the ball high to Kodai Senga. He jumps. He pulls his hamstring. He wasn't the same since. And then the rotation, one after another, guys got hurt after
but
that.
But the one thing I will say, then we would not have seen Nolan McLean, and we would have not have seen Brandon Sproten, Jonah Tong. Now, Jonah Tong's been a little bit up and down, unfortunately, for him. Doesn't look like he belongs here just yet. But, you know, Nolan McLean, you know, we would not have seen him had these other guys had not had these problems.
Absolutely. And, like, I'm not going to sit here and, like, shed tears about, you know, Griffin Canning and Tyler McGill not pitching. And, you know, Frankie Montas, nobody even wanted him to begin with. It's been bad. I mean, this is, and the Mets broke a record, Major League Baseball record, for amount of pitchers used in a season. And the team who they beat was the Marlins of last year, who lost 100 games. It just shows you how bad it's been.
And what, and the amazing thing is you have three pitchers for the Yankees, Will Warren, Max Fried, and Carlos Rodon, who have all pitched 32 or more games in this season.
Yep. And the postseason, Carlos Rodon, he could really change the narrative around him, man. And right now, I would count on it. I think you got to have more faith in that guy than you've ever had if you're a Yankee fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all. Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
I can't even trust the Reds to lose, despite them putting up an egg last night against Pittsburgh. So the Mets have to take care of business. To me, it's very simple. Win these five games, put everyone out of their misery, and let's go. I can't trust that they're going to do that. But I'll tell you one guy I do trust, and one guy who deserves all the praise in the world on this Wednesday afternoon, and sometimes I don't think we respect him enough. Sometimes I don't think we give him enough praise. And I think the reason he doesn't get enough praise is because nobody ever is going to be Mariano Rivera, and we all know that.
Mm-hmm.
But there has not been a closer in this town, outside of Mariano, because he's the GOAT, who is as dominant and honestly as trustworthy as Edwin Diaz. Look, Edwin Diaz may end up blowing a big save. He could blow a game tomorrow. I don't know. But here's what I know about him. The moment won't do him in. The moment did Aroldis Chapman in. The moment did Armando Benitez in.
Right.
The moment has done everybody in not named Mariano Rivera. And what this guy did last night, by coming into a two-run game against the heart of the Cubs order, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and striking out 5 out of 6 guys, not putting a man on base, not even making a sweat in the midst of that inning, that's what legends are made of. So I know it's the regular season. It's game 157. Pipe down, Evan. All right, I'm piping down. All I know is that the Mets are here today with the future in their hands because Edwin Diaz has you-know-whats the size of grapefruits. That's my closer.
I like it.
That's my closer. And you know what?
Look, all you can do is ask him to do the job that he was paid to do, and he does it extraordinarily well. What does he have this year? 3 blown saves?
3 blown saves, yes.
That's it.
He's not perfect.
No, of course not. But for the key most part, he's been pretty damn good.
But the key is, here's the thing about closers. Closers are going to blow saves. Mm-hmm. Like, Edwin Diaz, before anyone uses this against me, could blow a save tomorrow night. He could blow a game against Miami. It may come at the worst time. He blew a game against the Phillies in the playoffs last year. No one's saying he's perfect. What I am saying is that the moment never gets to him. Like, if he blows a save, it's going to be because he can't control his slider. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's going to be because he just doesn't have his stuff. What he did last night was ridiculously good. And now, let us hope that the Mets aren't teasing us the way they did in 2007 when John Maine almost threw a no-hitter on a Saturday. That teasing us the way Johan Santana and the Mets did on the following year Saturday. Let's hope this leads to something. Mm-hmm. But a couple of things that need to be taken care of. Number one, David Peterson. Thank you, David. You had a wonderful first half. You were an all-star. Please return your card key and go home. Like, they can't pitch David Peterson again.
But what else are you doing? You're just throwing the kids out there? What, you're doing the piggyback, the Clay Holmes and the Sean Manaea piggyback, and then the three kids? Is that the idea?
Well, I think you've got three options. Are you ready?
Go ahead.
I'm going to give you the options because I'm not just going to say David Peterson thinks get rid of him and not offer you a solution. So obviously the next 4 days are taken care of. Jonah Tong is going to pitch tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Nolan McClain is going to pitch Thursday. Brandon Sproat is going to pitch Friday. And then you have Holmes and Manaea ready for the tag team on Saturday.
So he needs a tag team.
Well, there's three options. That's one of them. I mean, absolutely. David Peterson can be a part of a tag team.
If you're going to look at the situation that was created with Clay Holmes, because obviously he had never been a starting pitcher. He is a starting pitcher for the first time this year. He's way up in innings that he's never even sniffed as a reliever. And you realize at some point he just gets fatigued, tired, worn out. It's a long-ass season. He made, what, 30 starts? Clay Holmes, whatever the number is or is going to be. You need to piggyback him.
Yes.
David Peterson's not that much different.
I think it's on the table.
21 innings was the most he'd ever
pitched. Yeah, yeah.
And now he's with 168.
As much as I'm done with David Peterson, the only thing I'd be open to is involving him in a piggyback.
With whom is the question?
Well, I think naturally it would be with either Clay Holmes or with Kodai Senga, who is still existing. Like, he's still on the planet. I know he's down in Florida throwing bullpens.
How's he doing down in Florida?
He's throwing bullpens down in Florida.
I know, but how is he doing?
How's he doing in a bullpen?
Yes.
I mean,
there's got to be some intel. His bullpens look good.
Yeah.
His bullpens look like, I don't know, crap. Who knows?
Well, here are the options.
Don't you need to know that before you make a decision?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know it, though, so I can pretend like I do. I have no idea. He's throwing bullpens.
Let's
option number one is David Peterson is involved in some kind of tag team with Clay Holmes or Kodai Senga. Option number two is no more tag teams. Mm. You split up Clay Holmes and Sean Manaea. You give Clay Holmes a regular Saturday start. You use your bullpen aggressively, and Sean Manaea takes the ball on Sunday. The other option is Kodai Senga. So those are the options, and I'm not suggesting any of them are good. The one thing I know, and it was confirmed last night, and it's been confirmed over the last 2 months, is that David Peterson can't literally go out there and start a baseball game like a traditional starter. He's a disaster right now. And the reason he's a disaster, we could argue. Is it him hitting his innings? Is the hip bothering him again? I have no idea. All I know is you can't pitch him. So those are the options. Which one would you go with?
I would piggyback him.
Okay.
Tag team him.
With Clay Holmes or Kodai Senga?
I kind of like the Clay Holmes, Sean Manaea piggyback. I know it only worked one time.
It worked twice.
They just didn't
score on Sunday.
Right. True. But it didn't feel like it was as effective as it was at the game we were at.
Right.
Clay went first and then Manaea backed him
up. That's because they scored like 7 runs in the first 3 innings.
This is true, but just from a pure pitching standpoint, it didn't feel the same. I would probably say with Senga, even though I don't trust Senga.
Well, I don't think we trust anybody, but I think that's the predicament they're in.
The question is, do you want Senga or Peterson to start the game? That's the challenge. I think with Clay Holmes, I can trust Clay Holmes to start a game. Sean Manaea, I don't know.
Well, here's
so that's why I want Clay Holmes to go first. It's not necessarily about how bad or good the Mets hit. It was who do you trust to start the game?
Right, right.
Clay's fine. The narrative for me in my mind on him is that by 4 or 5 innings, he's shot.
No, absolutely.
So bring in the piggyback right afterwards. I can't do that with Kodai, and I don't think now I can do it with David Peterson. So David needs to be the back end of the piggyback, but I don't know who this front end is.
Yeah, I think I would lean towards a Clay Holmes, David Peterson piggyback on Saturday, and Sean Manaea getting a regular start on Sunday.
Yeah,
either way,
if he gets just crushed.
But what if what? I mean, I don't know. These are the options that you have. I'm not saying any of them are good. Here's what I know: the next 3 days, the kids are on the mound. The kids have given you mostly good results. We know Jonah Tong had the disaster against DeGrom, but he bounced back in a very good way. Nolan McClain has been wonderful for the most part. Brandon Sproat the day after that. But if the Mets are going to win these 5 games, and that ensures you a playoff spot, what we saw offensively yesterday, what we saw from parts of the bullpen yesterday, not all of it, because Tyler Rogers was a disaster, is they're going to have to hit. And can they hit enough over these 5 days to make the postseason? Remember yesterday, late in the show, I put a poll out on social media. It was a very simple question. I said, will the Mets make the playoffs? And it was 74% no, 26% yes, which I think represented a very accurate kind of pool of Met fans. That was the negativity going into last night. After they came back and won, I put the exact same poll up. What do you think the results are now on will the Mets make the playoffs?
60% say yes.
Not quite that.
But much better?
It's much better than yesterday, but it's still 53% no, 47% say yes.
Okay.
So I think a few Met fans moved a little bit based on last night, but I think the majority of people still have that fear. While yesterday was an incredible victory and absolutely qualifies as one of those DVD kind of wins, they got to do it five more times.
Yeah.
And they can't do it by having their defense play as badly as it's had over the last five games. They can't do it with their starting pitching getting knocked out in the second inning. They can't do it that way. They can't do it on relying on the Chicago Cubs starter to come out after three innings because he has back spasms. So I loved last night's win. And that win is either going to live in Met history if they go on and make the playoffs and go on a run, or it's going to be a fart in the wind. They got five games to determine that. But as a diehard fan, I still don't trust them. They have to continue to earn that from me and just about everybody else.
Of course. Of course. That just comes by winning. The only thing you can do is win. Nothing else matters. Just find ways to win.
Now, I want you to be honest with me.
Yes.
I'm never going to shut the game off. Tommy's never going to shut the game off. But it's 6-1. Did Tiki Barber say, this game is over, why am I wasting my time?
Yeah. And I didn't come back to it until the Mets chat implored me to come back to it.
It was us?
Yes. Dude, the Mets chat was so depressive.
Yes, it was very depressive.
And I don't know, I hate this team. We suck. And all of a sudden, it was like, wow. I was like, oh, wait, what happened? And so then I turned it back on.
I think there was a quote, "Gut this gutless team," yes. Was actually a legitimate quote. So you check, because here's the thing. I think a lot of Met fans last night at 6-1, based on the disgust of the bad defense, mm-hmm. based on David Peterson being an abomination, based on the offense doing nothing in the first four innings other than a Lindor tone-setting home run, except it set no tone, I think a lot of Met fans shut the TV off too.
I mean,
Rich Ackerman, who does updates, admitted he shut it off.
It was hard to imagine them coming back.
No kidding.
And so when they did, it got exciting.
Did you shut it off, Sean?
No, but it was also because I wanted to see how much more pain was going to get inflicted.
That was a different way of viewing it.
Yeah, yes. But would it have mattered? If they had lost 12-1, would it have mattered?
Kind of. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be honest with the audience. The moment Soto butchered that ball earlier, I was all in for the ride. I really thought it was going to get ugly.
And you know what? I don't blame you. And I don't blame the Yankee fans who want to enjoy that pain. I was pissed at Soto. I don't want to hear about the wind. I don't want to hear about it. Like, you got to make that play.
You know what it felt like? When I saw him waffling around there doing the top spin top, I thought of a punt returner.
Yes.
Because he was lazy to the spot. I was like, get to the spot.
Yeah.
Like, get there and then find it. Don't find it while drifting around. You're never going to catch it.
Yeah.
And exactly what happened.
Oh, it was brutal.
It was so bad.
It was, sometimes.
But that's really the worst I've seen him.
Yeah, no,
I don't know if I've seen that.
I don't think Juan Soto's had a bad defensive year, but what I know is when there are bad moments, they are highlighted.
Yeah, they look bad.
And that's the story of Juan Soto and the kind of the microscope he's going to be under.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all. Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
There are four games left. If the New York Mets can win their games, they're going to the playoffs. If the Yankees can win their games and get one more piece of help, they're going to kind of improbably win the American League East. So here we are. It's gut check time. And let me start with the Yankees. We'll get to both in the open, and we'll get to your calls at 888-808-1019. For you, Sean, who I think you do a really good job of representing the disgruntled, angry Yankee fan.
Unfortunately.
I don't fully understand you guys half the time, but you do. You guys are in great position to steal the American League East, which means home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And as I've said many times, when they have it in the Boone era, they do not lose. Don't you agree that if somehow over these next four games you can gain one more on Toronto to take the American League East, that everything you have said and thought about this team should change?
Yes. Yes. Now, maybe not as far as winning a World Series, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. My biggest fear of this team, and part of the reason I absolutely nosedived in this team in the last 2 months, is especially when they didn't sweep the Blue Jays a couple weeks ago, you don't win the division, you're going to end up at a best of three. At the time, I thought either Houston or Boston, and you're going to start Max Fried in game one. There's a good chance you lose with Max Fried on the mound, and your season is over in the blink of an eye, especially if it was the Boston Red Sox. But man, avoiding that best of three dicey situation and getting home field advantage while winning a division and sitting back and waiting for a week was the path that got the Yankees there a year ago and is a path that I think changes everything about this team this year.
But there's something else that we do mistakenly throughout the 7 months of a baseball season or the 6 months of a baseball season. It's long and it's a roller coaster. Even in years that aren't as roller coastery as like the Mets season, there's highs and there's lows of a baseball season.
Definitely.
When we sat here in March, the Yankees over-under was 91.5. That was the reasonable expectation for the New York Yankees. Well, here we are with four games to go, and despite all the things that we couldn't have predicted, like Gerrit Cole hasn't thrown a pitch this season, like Luis Gil missed a bunch of time, like Aaron Judge missed 10 days.
Sure.
All the things you couldn't have predicted. Giancarlo Stanton wasn't playing for the first 2 months. Anthony Volpe you wanted to send down. They couldn't beat the Red Sox. They couldn't beat the Blue. All the stuff that we experienced over 6 months, the Yankees are in the exact position we predicted they would be, which is low to mid-90s with a real chance to win the American League East. And so I think we get caught up in the roller coaster, but at the end of the day, despite all the things that cause such emotions over the course of the season, the New York Yankees are where you thought they'd be,
sure,
where I thought they'd be, where basically everybody reasonably thought they would be before the roller coaster began.
Yeah, now I will be fair, though. I thought the American League would be better than it was a year ago where the Yankees tussled with the Royals and Guardians. I thought the Royals would be even better this year. I thought the Texas Rangers would have a rebound this year. I thought the Tigers would hang on and not do what they did this year. And a funny thing happened along the way. Evan ended up being right about the American League from the beginning of the year.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, Evan was right about the American League. So while it is fine to be a disgruntled, angry Yankee fan and not believe in the actual team as itself, unfortunately, all you could do is grade them amongst their peers. How many 2 years ago we did the peer tier thing in the NFL? And the peer tier tells you that this Yankee team, as we sit with four games left to go and now seeing another Blue Jay loss last night, man, if they could close this and avoid that dicey best of three, in the low to mid-90s, maybe where we thought they were going to be, but they're going to be better projected through the postseason and set up that way. And also, another thing happened along the way with that Yankee team. You mentioned everything they didn't have. Trent Grisham stepped up and ended up becoming one of the most clutch players in baseball, and the numbers he put up was something nobody saw coming
over
the year.
Look, we got here maybe not exactly the way we predicted it. Like, for example, I think if we were having this conversation in the middle of March, and we did, and we were figuring out how the Yankees were going to get to 91, 92, 93 wins, the outfielder who was going to put up those numbers was Jason Dominguez. And it's disappointing he didn't. It's disappointing he's no longer really a starter on this team. But baseball has a funny way of working out.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be Trent Grisham.
Right.
But at
and it could be Dominguez going forward. But for this year, absolutely.
But at the
Grisham forced the issue.
At the end of the day, the Yankees are going to end up pretty much where we thought, which is, as, in my opinion, the team to beat in the American League. They are right there in finishing the season with the best record in the American League. And where they deserve a ton of credit is, I know the White Sox are bad. All right, we get it. The Twins are bad. I get it. As you look around baseball, as you look around at Toronto and even the Mets struggles, all these other teams, the Astros, who, by the way, how are they doing against the A's? I must have missed it. How are they doing? How are the Reds doing against the Pirates?
I told you it was an old-timers team.
Beating crappy teams is not easy. We act like it is. It's not. And to the Yankees' credit, they are beating them constantly. Now, they've got four more to go because they still need to win these final four games, hope for a little bit of help. They can't get tripped up. And that almost feels like unfair. Like, you get tripped up in baseball. You don't beat the bad teams all the time. But to the Yankees' credit, they kind of have. They've destroyed the bad teams. And I think that there is credence to how important that is instead of just, well, it's the White Sox. Who cares?
Look,
You got to win these games, and the Yankees have done as good of a job beating the bad teams as anybody else. That's not fool's gold, Tommy. That's what you need to do to secure the number one seed in a league. And not everyone does it.
No, and frankly, there were moments the last two nights where I thought the Yankees weren't going to do it. I mean, the night before where they need magic at the end, the bottom of the ninth, where they were listless with their bats all night. And even last night, you load the bases in the first inning, you strand it. I thought they were dead in the water.
You thought they were dead in the water against the White Sox?
I've seen enough Yankee games to know when you strand the bases loaded like that, but they, boom, King Judge rises and the whole thing happens. So they are finding ways to do it, and you have to give them credit for that.
I do have an observation about the Chicago White Sox, and I want to be very careful with how I say this because I'm not accusing anybody of anything, okay? I want to make that very clear. So we live in a world in which players have been investigated for having FanDuel accounts or DraftKings accounts, and ooh, that was weird. Like in the NBA, we've had the player prop scandals.
See the Cleveland Guardians closer who hasn't been closing.
Emmanuel Clase doesn't exist anymore. So this is unfortunate because I preface this with when somebody in baseball does something so bad over and over again, you start to wonder like, hey, do they have an account? Like, it does go through your mind. So now that I got that out of the way, now I'm going to rip someone for how bad they've looked. And it just makes you wonder, like, what the hell's going on? Are they this bad or is something going on? What's up with Michael Taylor? Michael Taylor didn't die for a line drive on the Yankee walk-off, in which he should have. Everybody noticed that. Everyone who watched the game said, whoa, that's kind of weird. Yeah. And then last night, he slows up on a fly ball up the gap. I think it was the Jazz Chisholm hit.
Yes.
His at-bats are listless. He was 0-for-3 with two strikeouts. It's just, is he that bad or... I'll just leave it at that.
I mean,
is he that bad? Maybe he's bad.
Anything could be. He could be that bad. I think Michael Taylor has all the reads of a player in the last week of a dead season that's going, I'm not pulling a single muscle. I am getting on the golf course Monday, and that is it.
Okay. I believe you.
But
just write that down.
Hard subject to change in this day and age in sports.
No, honestly, I don't think anything. It's just when you see bad performances now, and I think it's just the state of the world we live in. I mean, unfortunately, when you see bad performances, you're like, damn, that's weird. Yeah, he's bad. But to the Yankees' credit, they've taken advantage of it.
But they've taken advantage of it. If we're going to spin this forward, I'm going to say this now. The Blue Jays have done their part in handing this back to the Yankees. Now, not all the way yet because you lost the tiebreaker. There are four games left. Forget the idea of asking the Yankees to go 6-0. The two games are already banked. Look at this as a four-game season. You've beaten all the bad teams. White Sox, three with the Orioles, all at home. You got to do your part now. You got to go 4-0.
You're going to kill them if they lose one of these games? You're going to kill them. You're going to crush them.
The division changes everything about this team. You are playing four. It's two bad teams, but let's just say four games versus bad teams. Go win all four. If the Jays happen to win all four, so be it.
No, I think if they lose a game in the final four, which is normal because you don't beat the bad teams 100% of the time, I think it would be just fair to look back at your regular season games against Toronto and said, man, if one would have been turned,
definitely,
it changes everything.
That comeback they didn't finish.
Yeah. But I cannot, and I completely agree with you, I cannot minimize the difference between being a division champion with the number one seed in the American League versus a wild card series. And I've had this argument. I think Tommy and I actually had it last year more in the National League with, hey, I'd almost rather have the momentum. I'd rather play the wild card series. I'm not putting words in your mouth. I know you've said that before to me, right?
I have. Now, I think in the case of the Yankees, it suits them better to have the home field because they play better at home.
100%. Like, I get everybody's different. But what I would always argue...
And the longer the series goes, I think it benefits a Yankee team as opposed to the short, boom, two bullets and you're done.
Yeah, I get you. I think it just benefits you to not have the risk of losing two out of three. Anybody can lose two out of three. I wouldn't want to risk it. It's why divisions matter. It's not the end-all, be-all. Clearly, we've seen that you can win the division and get knocked out immediately. I mean, it's happened a lot. I'm not saying it doesn't, but it is such a difference for this Yankee team, and really for anybody, to go right to the divisional series with home field versus playing two out of three. Now, on the Mets side of things, the Mets had a weird night last night. They sucked. They lost. Jonah Tong was bad. Blah, blah, blah. Their defense was bad. The Mets basically continued to play the way they've played for the last 4 months.
Except for that Tyrone Taylor throw earlier.
That was a great throw by Tyrone Taylor. And the Francisco Alvarez had a two-run home run. And Ryan Helsley looked good. Great. You found the positives. Can we move on now?
Yes.
What was weird about last night, and I'm going to do it throughout the day, is that the Reds and Diamondbacks games matter as much as the Mets games. That's just the facts now. We are at the nitty-gritty of this season. And I've said this a million times, there's nothing that can change the fact that the Mets have had a disastrous regular season. okay? No matter what happens. Nope. They make the playoffs with 84 wins. I'm glad they made the playoffs. It was a disastrous regular season. So we've all accepted that. But the Reds losing last night the way they did was huge. The Diamondbacks, after they rallied and then they hold Ohtani and Betts and Freeman with the Manfred man not scoring a run, was huge. And they still lost. The Diamondbacks did. And so the Mets actually had a night last night, I'm still trying to come to grips with this, where they sucked and they got their ass whooped, but they still control their future.
Yeah, you almost wake up forgetting the Mets actually lost their game.
That's the problem. I don't. But I also understand that if the Reds and the Diamondbacks are going to continue to you-know-what-the-bed, then, yeah, the Mets may not have to win all four games. Because God knows I don't trust them to, and I can't imagine how anybody would. But I do admit that this pennant race is causing such weird emotions, where when I put my head on the pillow last night after the Dodgers held on in the 11th inning, and yes, I am staying up till 1 a.m. watching this, I went to bed and I was like, okay.
What date do you get sick, by the way? November 4th?
Saturday. Yeah. It's coming up.
Oh,
but that's where we are with the Mets. And what's happening, and you got to agree with me on this. Every Met fan, including you, positive Tommy, has to agree with me. The Reds losing and the Diamondbacks losing would make missing the playoffs worse than it was even 4 days ago. Because it's not like someone's grabbing it. No one's grabbing it. They're all allowing the Mets more opportunities to grab it. And so if they miss the playoffs, which is still on the table, and to me still the likeliest scenario, I think it gets worse by the day because of how inept the Reds have been and how the Diamondbacks couldn't take advantage of it at least last night.
They've begged the Mets to pad a lead here, and they just will not.
It makes it worse?
Yes.
It makes it worse. Because I remember back in 1998, the Mets had a collapse no one remembers. They lost their last five games. And as they were losing their last five games, the Giants and the Cubs, who they were in a pennant race with, they kept losing too. Every day they kept losing. Brant Brown dropped a fly ball in left field. Am I kidding you? To lose a game. In Milwaukee.
Your brain is special, man.
And the Mets couldn't take advantage of it. And so what killed me in 98 versus 07 and versus this year is, I know 07 was bad. We all know, oh yeah, 17 ago. The Phillies took it.
Yeah.
You know, the Mets choked, no doubt, but it was in combination with the Phillies grabbing it.
Yeah, the Reds ain't grabbing anything.
The Reds aren't grabbing it. The Diamondbacks have played well for a long period of time, but they lose last night. They haven't grabbed it yet. So it is making a Met playoff miss worse, what's happening around us. I'm glad it's happened. I'm glued to Reds Pirates right now. I'll keep you posted. Diamondbacks Dodgers a little bit later. Yeah. I'll keep you posted. So trust me, I want them to lose. I want as much help as we can get. But I got to admit, if this team doesn't make the playoffs with a billion-dollar payroll, with the great start they got off to, with the Reds and the Diamondbacks not grabbing it, bro, this is all-time bad.
And a lot relying on some young arms that weren't here 2 months ago, because as the Mets, you've seen the last two nights, all these pitchers you go through, you're asking in these last four games, that is a lot of outs to get from this Mets staff if these young arms don't give you innings.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing with Jonah Tong is that, and I know Tiki and I had this argument about 3 weeks ago, where he said, hey, the Mets are rushing all their young arms. And I said, not really. I think they earned their way here. Jonah Tong was rushed.
Clearly.
He was rushed. And I think you're seeing it. He's not ready. He's showing you signs of what he can be, and I still believe he has a chance to be a really good pitcher in this league for the Pittsburgh Pirates once he's in a deal for Paul Skenes. But Nolan McLean and Brandon Sproat, no matter what happens tonight with McLean, no matter what happens tomorrow with Sproat, I think they did enough in the minor leagues, and they've certainly shown you signs here that they weren't rushed. If they struggle, they struggle. I think they're ready. Jonah Tong isn't ready, and he looks like he's 12 years old. And last night, like every time he does a post-game interview, I got to tell you, I feel bad. I look into his eyes, and I say, boy, they really put you in a tough spot.
It's not his fault. I mean, it looks like Kodai Senga ain't coming here anytime soon the way he's been, and Sean Manaea comes out of the pen and again looks hapless. So what are the Mets supposed to do with that?
They don't have a lot of great options. Yesterday, late in the show, I brought up Kodai Senga, and Tiki said, what's the update on Kodai? And I said, well, the update on Kodai is he threw a bullpen. And Tiki said, how'd he do? I said, it's a bullpen. I don't know how he did. About 5 minutes later, Carlos Mendoza met the media and did something I was surprised by. He crapped on Kodai Senga. He did. He said, well, his velocity was down. You know, there's some concerns about the heat, you know, possibly causing fatigue. I mean, basically, the Mets are done with Kodai Senga. Let's just be honest.
The heat causing fatigue?
Dude, they're done with this guy. Like, this isn't me being done with the guy. I've liked Kodai Senga. Right. I've been encouraged by what I've seen. I understand that some fans are turned off because it seems like everything needs to be perfect. I'm not telling you my opinion. I'm reading the Mets' opinion. The Mets are done with this guy. He's not going to pitch the rest of this season, and you can mark my words, he's on a different team next year. That's the vibe I'm getting because they threw David Peterson out there 2 days ago. They threw a little child in Jonah Tong out there yesterday.
A child?
I feel bad. He's a man, but he just, during these post-game interviews, it feels like he's 14.
He does.
They don't want to throw Kodai Senga out there. Ask yourself why. They think he's done.
Yeah.
They don't think he can do anything. And considering the state of the Met rotation, doesn't that tell you how they feel about Kodai Senga?
Yes, because they'd be dying to use somebody they've spent that much money on him right now in a pennant race, and they just can't trust them. Now, it does leave us with tonight, Evan. I know we're going to get to it more. If tonight is finally the night where Nolan McLean isn't the Nolan McLean he's been, where do Met fans sit on that? You get a little angst at the organization, or will there be some, hey, Nolan, you didn't show up for us here tonight?
Look, I think that McLean and Sproat, and you're even seeing it with Tong,
yeah,
they're not taking the heat. The heat is the fact that they're in this situation. Like, Nolan McLean is allowed to have a bad start. Would tonight be horrible timing? Yes.
Because you also might know the Reds and Diamondbacks have won by the time he takes them out.
Absolutely. Like, I'm not denying that it would be terrible timing, but no, I think we as Met fans look at Nolan McLean and say, thank God he's here. Where would the Mets be if he wasn't? They'd be out of a playoff spot. So I think that McLean, Sproat, and you've certainly even seen with Tong, they're not taking the heat. What's taking the heat is David Stearns. What's taking the heat is Carlos Mendoza. What's taking the heat are individual bats. Look, last night, other than Juan's solo in the eighth inning, 1-5, 1-4, they were 1-16.
Awful.
They didn't do anything. So they're taking the heat.
Even after the win 2 nights ago, where I had no belief in them, I'm not going to react to a game where they come back, even in a game that they were down. They don't have enough. I mean, I said this a week ago, and it was dead on correct. The New York Mets don't have enough to get over the finish line. 4 games to go. They still have the 1-game lead because the Diamondbacks and Reds both lost in extra innings last night. You watch that game, you tell me why anybody on earth who watches baseball would believe that the Mets can actually finish strong here over the next final 4 games to get themselves into the postseason.
There's nothing that I could say except that they don't necessarily have to finish strong because the other teams aren't playing that well. That's the only answer at this point. That is the only hope. This is an unwatchable circus. I don't know what the hell's wrong with this team. I really don't. I mean, it's almost just too simplistic to say that they're not good enough. I mean, we've seen teams in our city where we know they're a little light in terms of talent. And, you know, not that that's a good feeling, but we can at least understand why they're falling a little bit short. I don't know how many times we've seen teams with high-level talent at the top end that are just disintegrating in this manner on a night-by-night basis. Even their wins are ugly.
Yeah, I mean, look, to me, there are a lot of different little things you could point to that are frustrating, but ultimately it boils down to the starting pitcher. You can't continually have guys that go out there and give you a couple innings. Like Jonah Tong, how does stuff look last night?
Not good.
Yeah, well, that's the point. Like, and I can't even blame him because he's a young kid. He shouldn't be in this spot, but was any, like, I was more shocked what Tong did last Thursday against the Padres than I was what he did last night against the Cubs. I expected that after, now you look at his last 3 starts, 2 have been god-awful, and yet everybody's telling me how great Jonah Tong is. So, and that's just one example. And it's all about Nolan McLean now. Tonight, he's got to be the savior. But think about the back-to-back starts that they had from Peterson and Tong. We are in the bullpen immediately. And now you've got 15 guys coming out of the bullpen each night to a point where last night, Clay Holmes and Sean Manaea are getting in the game.
Doing throw days in games.
Okay, so that's why when I say the Mets don't have enough, if you project this forward, and you could do this last week when they had 9 or 10 games to go, whatever it was, they literally don't have enough. We could argue about who you'd start, who you'd take out of the rotation, who has good stuff, who doesn't. Ultimately, there are no good answers for the Mets. And now I think it's finally caught up with them. No off days, 4 straight days to go. They've got to win these games. And they have, outside of McLean tonight and a bullpen that with Diaz and Rogers and really getting the night off last night, you would expect this to be the A game tonight. So they have to win this game tonight against the Cubs. And even if they do, what's going to follow over the weekend? Like, they don't even have. So yeah, Sproat's going to get a start. Then it's going to be a bullpen heavy game behind him because that Maxi's 6 innings. And then who the hell's pitching Saturday and Sunday against the Marlins? Like, they're toast. I'm sorry. They're done.
Okay, so what I don't understand, I need you to help me with this, because I really don't understand this. I understand being light, and I understand giving the baseball to kids who probably aren't ready at this point. And that is out of necessity, because the guys who are making real money and the veterans who are supposed to carry the mail have not done their job. We all understand that. It's unfair to Tong. I do like his stuff. He looks overwhelmed right now. I can't even waste time on that. The poor kid is in a position he shouldn't be in right now.
Because they have no choice.
100%. Right. 100%. Now, can you explain to me why the other basic components of the baseball team are just falling apart? And it's not that, it can't be that, well, it's 157 games and they're tired, or, you know, they're finishing up on the road. I mean, this is the marathon that every other baseball team goes through. I mean, the Cubs are going through it as well. They didn't play well against the Reds the previous series. They looked a little more buttoned up last night. Why can't the Mets catch the baseball? Why can't the Mets suddenly function on the most basic level? That's not Tong. That's not Sprout. That's not a bullpen that's tired. They're not even catching the baseball.
Yeah, but it's not all of them. Like, do you think Pete Alonso's a good defensive player?
I thought that he became serviceable, but he's suddenly taken a massive step back.
Well, I don't
so the answer would be, in a long way, no.
Yeah, I don't think he's taken a step back. I just don't think he's ever been good. Like, he's good at picking balls at first.
Yeah.
He can't throw.
Yeah, he can't throw a lick. We all know this.
And he's not a great fielder. Yep. I'm not picking on him. I'm just starting with him.
Yep.
So I don't think he's a good fielder. So when he makes mistakes, it's not like, what the hell's happening here? That to me is like, well, he's not very good defensively. You think Mark Vientos a good defensive third baseman?
No, I think he's got a good arm. I think he's got a really good arm, and I think his hands are awful.
Me neither. I don't think he's a good third baseman defensively. Yep. I would bet that.
Well, then why isn't Beatty playing?
Because of matchups, and that's the matchups. Issue.
I know he said that last night. I hear you. Lefty stuff. At least Beatty's going to catch the baseball.
Yeah, but even he's not great. But yes, he's a much better defender. But they're trying to get the offense there. Like, that's the sign to me of just, you don't like. It's not like, wow, what the hell's going on here? Vientos making an error. It's that. Vientos not very good defensively.
Okay, but then why isn't Holmes covered home plate? I mean. Like, the mental components are not there. The physical like, some things we understand. You know, sometimes you ask people to do things that they're not really equipped to do because they don't have the talent, or they're just not refined enough yet because they're young, like in the case of Tong. What the hell's Holmes' excuse?
There is no excuse.
I mean, the ball goes back to the backstop, he's staring down at the dirt.
Yeah, a guy's scoring from second. You know why?
Oh, my God.
Because he's thinking that he needs to be better, and he's frustrated with the pitching that he's had lately. Like, there's a lot that goes into it. It's an excuse. We saw with Gerrit Cole last year in the World Series.
Yep,
like that.
Yep,
it
yep.
happens when guys are just thinking. I'm not absolving him from the blame. It's just a little bit of everything with them. Beatty getting picked off the bases the other day. Like, guys being put in bad positions, guys not being able to field balls properly. Also, guys that aren't just good, period. Whether it's good defensive players, whether it's good enough offensively. Like, it's a culmination of things. But I really do believe that it all stems from the starting pitching. I mean, I've never seen anything like this on a team that has this much talent that can't get starters to go. Like, the worst years of watching the Mets, their starters would go five innings, and it wouldn't be very good five innings, but at least you go five innings, maybe six innings, give up four or five runs. Okay, that's a bad start, but at least you give six innings. These guys are going two innings.
They're getting six, seven outs, if you're lucky.
Dude, and it's been going on for months.
I know it has. And listen, we knew that there was going to be some residual damage downstream with the bullpen. And we say that not just specific to the 2025 Mets. We talk about that a lot. When you have bullpens that are used early, April, May, I mean, that's one of the most basic components of baseball. How many times have we said on the radio, we said this about the Yankees over the years too sometimes, well, you know, what's the bullpen going to look like in the dog days when you're running them out there every day in the first couple of months of the season? Listen, I still think they're going to get in only because I don't trust the Reds. I don't trust the other teams, the Diamondbacks. I don't trust the teams. But they look and they feel and they act like a losing team.
Yeah.
That's what they look like right now.
Like a dead team.
Yep.
Now, maybe if they own the tiebreaker over the Reds or Diamondbacks, I'd feel differently. But even the math to me doesn't add up to them going. I know right now it's like, well, all right, well, a day comes off the calendar and they still have a game lead. But to me, it's really not that. There's four games to go. Like, the Mets could have a game lead on the final day of the year and lose, and one of those two teams win, and they're out.
Yes.
Like, so you could take, so one game lead with four to go to me is not comfortable.
Tonight's tonight. Tonight's tonight.
Well, because it's McLain.
Tonight's tonight.
And he doesn't give you McLain's got to go at least six innings, and then you have to hope, cross your fingers, stop me if you've heard this before, Rogers, Raley, Diaz, their best guys in some form, preserve whatever lead they have, assuming that they could actually get a lead and not fumble all over themselves. Like, I just think it's too much to ask at this point. And the Reds and Diamondbacks, one may keep losing. I think the Reds are going to win today. They're not going to get swept by the Pirates. They almost came back yesterday. Like, okay, they lost their two games. They're going to get a win today. At least one, if not both of those teams, will start to win a couple of games here in the final four.
Yeah.
So even if they went 2-2, like, I don't trust that the Mets are going to win tonight, and I don't trust that they're going to take 2 out of 3 from the Marlins.
I feel pretty good about tonight, but the Marlins thing, and listen, we talked about this yesterday. We were kind of just pushing this forward, like, all right, who's going to pitch Saturday? Who's going to pitch Sunday? Well, it looks like a combination of Manaea and Peterson. We talked about this. Peterson, I mean, I know things can change, but if you give the baseball to Peterson with a must-win situation on Sunday, Mets aren't going to the playoffs. If you go to the, in my opinion, if you go to the situation on Saturday where you have to win and Manaea starts the game, Mets aren't going to the playoffs. Like, to me, there's one hope. I mean, that they score 8 runs and they just bludgeon a couple of teams down the stretch and they outscore them.
Yeah, and hope that you can hold the other team off.
Hope you can hold on.
Dude, here's all you need to know, and then we'll get to the calls here, 888-808-1019. The night before, their all-star, David Peterson, couldn't get it out of the second inning. Okay? They had to go to 6, whatever it was. Last night, there's 5 games to go in the season. You're fighting for your playoff lives. Richard Lovelady is on the mound in the third inning.
Dude.
Richard bleeping Lovelady.
This guy, his name just cracks me. It's like you can't make it up. It's like, you know, Richard Lovelady's
five
on the mound.
Games that season to go. The highest payroll in the sport. You're fighting for your playoff life. You watch that game in the third inning and Richard Lovelady's in.
My son goes, who the hell's this guy?
Same.
Last night.
Same, Colt.
Who is this guy?
And then not only that, you have to go to your starters. Like, this is not even us saying, like, oh, they don't have enough. Or they're showing you. Like, Mendy's like, I don't know what you want me to do.
I know.
I thought about going to this game tonight because my buddies are going. I just can't make the trip. It's impossible to take the time off. It's chaos for us. Like, busiest time of the year. But, like, I feel like if I showed up in the stands at Wrigley tonight, Mendy may turn to me and be like, Licata, you got anything for us? Like, I could use you. That's how, like, they will take anything they could possibly get. Maybe they should call up R.A. Dickey. Forget about Dickey Lovelady. Call up R.A. Dickey, who was blowing knuckleballs by Piazza on Old Timers Day. Like, maybe go get him. He can get you out of
there. Johan looked pretty good, too, in the alumni game.
He's
got that good changeup still.
Put it this way. R.A. Dickey can't be worse than David Peterson, Jonah Tong, or anybody else that's been pitching for the Mets outside of Nolan McClain for the last 3 months.
Listen, I know that we said this, but this has to be said again. In a pennant race here, where every out matters, the Mets last night went to not one, but 2 guys who should be throwing in the bullpen to get ready for their next start, and they pitched in the game last night. And didn't pitch particularly well, by the way.
BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire. Remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Jack is calling from Hoboken. What's up, Jack?
Hey, Jack.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah, so the Mets have, you know, a lot of issues. You know, I like the strength of their lineup, way too inconsistent. But, I mean, David Stearns brought this upon himself by being way too cautious when it comes to pitching. Like, it's absolutely unacceptable that you're bringing up a 22-year-old in a pennant race and expecting him to save the day when you have the richest owner in baseball. And that's why, you know, you see the Yankees are still a World Series contender and the Mets are not.
Well, I don't think it's just that. I think the Yankees are far better, and thank you for the call. See, when the season is over and the Mets do, in fact, miss the postseason, Stearns is going to be the number one bullseye. He'll be the number one target, and rightfully so. However, what makes you think Stearns was counting on Jonah Tong? He wasn't. He had no choice. It is fair to criticize Stearns for the lack of quality arms in the offseason. However, they did have 9 serviceable starters that almost to a man, every single one of them has fallen apart. Did anybody think Manaea would not pitch well when he came back? Did anybody expect that Kodai Senga wouldn't be at least serviceable since he came back from injury? Like, those guys you can't blame Stearns for. You want to get on Holmes. You want to get on the
Montas.
Others. Yeah, and they did have, well, that
just
was
just
a
just giving you the whole picture.
Yeah,
Griffin Canning was pitching pretty well before ruptures Achilles, to be fair.
Trade deadline. Like, you know, again, Tyler Miguel. Like, a lot of their depth, not that I'm saying that they're great, but
they had a lot of arms.
A lot of their depth. They did have quantity,
yeah,
not quality.
I agree with that.
They did have quantity. And then it was one by one guys dropping like flies. And then the guys that you relied on, like the 3 biggest culprits to me, Peterson, Manaea, Senga. Those are the three that you have the highest expectations for. And all three have been disasters for the last 2 months. And those guys, to me, you can't get on Stearns for. Everybody else, yes. Those three, I'm not so sure you could get on Stearns
for. I mean, whenever we have the conversation about the Mets offseason, Stearns is going to get absolutely crushed because I think he's had an awful year this year. Not that I think that he should get fired. I'm not saying that at all. He won't be. But I think almost every move that he has made has been an F. But we have time to talk about that. But I said this 2 weeks ago. I said there's really only two factions or groups that have really done their job. The owner's done his job. Right. Cohen's cut the checks. And the fans have done their job because they've showed up. Of course, Soto's had a great statistical season.
So
is Pete.
Yeah,
but I'm saying, when you look at the hierarchy of a franchise, right? So you have the ownership, you have the GM, you have the manager. Owner, A+ this year. Mm-hmm. GM, to me, an F. Mendy, about a C- or a D. That's just my opinion. So now you get into the players, and Lindor's been hot recently, but he's been a little bit up and down. All the things, we can get into the weeds with your own. We don't really need to do it now. But when you have a GM that has had the kind of year that Stearns has had, you're in trouble. Much like now, Cashman finally, to me, gets like an A- or maybe higher, which is why the Yankees have some life. But if Cashman had maybe the trade deadline or the offseason that he's had in prior years, I don't think the Yankees would have the opportunity to maybe do what we think they could do because the GM elevated them. And I don't even mean to bring the Yankees, but I really, I shouldn't even do that. But I think really Cashman elevated the Yankees this year. And I really think that Stearns' moves really... It just brought the Mets down. Well, everything he did has failed.
It's actually hard to miss on as many as he's missed.
It's almost impossible.
Almost everyone has been a disaster.
Yeah.
However, the reason why the Mets are in this predicament, to me, is a combination of Stearns' bad moves, off-season, in-season, whatever, plus the players sucking. Like, it's not just, well, Stearns, you put this team together. Oh, did anybody not want David Peterson, Sean Manaea, or Kodai Senga in the rotation? And now those guys can't get anybody out. Like that's 3/5 of the starting rotation.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have come to that.
That part's fair. That's fair.
So it's not just all on David Stearns. Anybody not want Mark Vientos in the lineup?
No, but think about if center field was handled differently. Think about if he did get another starter, which a lot of us were saying that he should.
I know, but who's that guy?
I don't know.
But he relied on the young guys to come up instead of going out there in the trade deadline. And that has actually worked. Like, McLean has been a stud. There was no arm that he could have gotten on the trade deadline that would have been better than Nolan McLean.
Well, the one thing, I hear you on that because there were no other arms outside of, like, Bieber, right, that were really dealt.
I
hear you. But that doesn't mean that you couldn't maybe incentivize a team to give up somebody that they didn't. Like, when people say, well, nobody was traded, what did you want them to do? Well, what I would say, whether it's Stearns or anybody else, how about you construct a deal that's appealing enough to maybe make somebody trade you somebody?
Right, but then who would have been that guy?
I don't know. And that's his job.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Well, I just don't think that there was a definitive, like, they got to go get this guy. I remember feeling at the time, whatever. Because you're also factoring in, well, Senga's coming back, Manaea's coming back, and they could go into the minors. All of those things happen. It's just that Senga couldn't get anybody out. Manaea couldn't get anybody out. Peterson fell apart. They did go to the minors, and one of the guys is a stud. The other two have at least been serviceable for the most part. Like, I mean, I don't know what more he could have asked for there, but there is no doubt about it that Stearns has had an F of a season. Jimmy is calling from Smithtown. What's up, Jimmy?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I know this maybe sounds simplistic, but ever since that time Soto said that Marte was the leader in the clubhouse, I don't know. Things seem to have gone downhill. I mean, there's other contributing factors, of course, you know, the pitching and the not hitting in the clutch. But it just seems since that day, really, like, you know, the whole vibe around the team just isn't the same.
Well, really, it was before that, though, Jimmy, and thank you for the call. And nobody really made a big deal about that, and I was shocked that nobody did make a big deal about that Soto clearly saying that Marte was the leader in that clubhouse. But that, to me, like, they've been playing bad since June 13th. That came out at the end of August.
Yep.
Even if you look to August, like, the Mets have been playing poor baseball from August on. So I don't think that has to do with why they're struggling.
I don't either. And we talked about it a little bit. I didn't think it was a big deal. I thought it was more like Soto was trying to illuminate Marte's strengths rather than downgrade Soto. That was downgrade Lindor. Yep. Pardon me. That was my take then. And that's still my take. And by the way, if you think about the three components that were involved in that, Soto has played very well since then. Lindor has hit very well since then, and Marte's been very good since then. So the other stuff I can't possibly quantify, but see, I don't use, and you, the Mets aren't collapsing. This is not like a 17 to go and up 7. This is not that. This is not 2007 or 2008. Though I would not use the word collapse. I would use the word implosion.
Right.
It's different. Like, collapse tells me you got a couple of games to go and suddenly you just lose your way and somehow you fall apart and you just choke it away. It's not a choke job or a collapse. It's just an inner implosion, like the guts of the team. When you lift up the hood for the Mets,
they don't have enough.
It's not pretty, man.
They don't have enough. A collapse is what is going on with the Detroit Tigers. I mean, that,
yes,
is a collapse. And by the way, the sport is just, it's wild. The Blue Jays are collapsing.
No, I'm not seeing that. Let's go. Suck on that, Buck.
Like, that is a part of it. And not yet, but it will happen eventually. The Blue Jays, Yankees, I can't wait. It's going to be a sweet victory lap if the Yanks do, in fact, pass the Blue Jays and win that AL East. But yeah, that to me is like, the Blue Jays choking away a division. The Tigers, full-blown collapse. The Mets just don't have enough. They've been trying to hang on. They don't have enough, and I don't know how they're going to get through the final four games. Maybe outside of tonight with McClain, there are no answers pitching-wise for the next three games beyond tonight.
Yes, that line forms on the right, babe. Not that Maggie's back in town.
Mick Monagle here with you on this Football Friday. And we'll get to the football, but we got three more games. Three games for our lives. Three games to exorcise the demons. Three games to maybe win a division. Three games to get into the postseason. 888-808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you. We got Fleegs on the other side, and we're taking your phone calls. Again, 888-808-1019. And we'll get to the Yankees as well, and we'll get to the start of the Jackson Dart era with the New York Football Giants. The unrest in the fan base, looking to hire more planes, God knows why. But let's start with the New York Mets with an enormous win last night. A huge win last night that sets them up for three games in Miami against the Marlins, a team that has cost them dearly throughout the years, obviously going back all the way to 07 and 08, and obviously no one on either team has anything to do with those years, but still, Met fans know. Big games, end-of-season games, desperate for wins to get into the postseason. The Marlins have cost the Mets time and time again. Can they show up? Can they change what they did, right? This team has such trouble. Building momentum, taking success from one game and rolling it into the other. And obviously just in this series, as they score a ton of runs in game one, they have the disastrous performance in game number two. And then last night with McClain on the mound, your ace, a game you had to have, you come right out of the gate and you get two runs that were so critical to this success of this game and what you needed desperately to give McClain a lead. And you get a big, double down the line from Pete Alonso, and then you get a break, right? Because you're looking at second and third, one out, Vientos up. That at-bat is so critical to come through in the first inning, because we saw with the Yankees the last couple of days, actually. I mean, I know it's not nearly as important. It is. You want to win those games, obviously. They set themselves up for a chance for the division, but it's almost demoralizing when you have runners on and you don't score. It's almost worse than if you didn't do anything. It's that you felt like you had an opportunity to break the game open, especially against a good pitcher like Imanaga. Like, you don't want to leave runners out there. In a huge game like this, you want to give your young starter, who you have faith in. Like, I think we all, we understand he's the ace, and you expect him to go out there and pitch well, and he did, even though his line won't indicate it, and we'll get to everything that happened in this game. But this is a big moment, big spot, eighth start of his career. He has yet to have one where he stubs his toe, really. I mean, anything could happen in these games. That's one of the best offenses. It's been one of the best offenses in baseball all year long. They're down some guys. Kyle Tucker, obviously is looking to DH tonight, but he's been out for a while. Like, so it's not, they're not at their best, and you've kind of, they exploded for runs the night before. Who knows what happens? And to have second and third and one out, and Vientos up, and he hits that pop-up, and you assume that if it's caught, you're looking at Brandon Nimmo, who came through with the big home run the other night but has struggled. We saw him strike out with the bases loaded on Saturday when he could have won the game. Like, that pop-up goes up, and you figuring, oh, man, they are not going to score any runs here. And to get the break of the little bit of confusion between third base and shortstop, and to see Dansby Swanson catch it and goes into the stands, which, if you didn't know the rule, Yankee fans do, because in the World Series last year with Verdugo catching the little pop-up from Ohtani and going into the stands and having the runners move up. You know, if you go out of play, the runner, you get a base, and to have that little bit of luck that gives you that first run, and then Nimmo with the huge home run, huge base hit to give you that second run, and you get two runs before McClain gets on the field, before he toes the rubber. Those were enormous. Those are enormous. And there's obviously other big hits. You get the Beatty home run, who now, and we'll get to the idea moving forward about what the lineup should be, and Beatty is establishing himself as the everyday third baseman against left-handed pitching, against right-handed pitching, against ambidextrous starting pitching. I don't care. Beatty's your starting third baseman, makes another great play defensively with the bare hand. Like, he is clearly the best defender you have at third, and right now he's proving to be the best option just completely. Big home run, obviously. Tyrone Taylor, another guy, another big hit that makes this game 8-2, which you aren't sure what the importance of that is. That, what ends up happening, and the home runs given up by McClain, that's an enormous hit. You're starting to stabilize. That's the one thing about the Mets. Like, I don't know how they're going to play. I don't. I've been confident more than most. More than most Met fans, I've been saying it. They're going to find a way. They're going to find a way. This team is too good. They're going to find a way to get into the postseason. But there's been these issues. There's no doubt there's been issues. Center field has been an issue. I feel like Tyrone Taylor is establishing himself as the everyday starting center fielder. He's brilliant defensively. Now that he's come back from the injury, he makes a great play at the beginning of the series, in the second game of the series, rather, that you thought would have major impact at the play at the plate. Ultimately, it doesn't. But still, that's a huge defensive play. We have seen this team go through the Mullins era. We've seen it try and do Siri over the last couple weeks. We saw a game where Nimmo gets moved over. Jeff McNeil in center field. Center field has been a real tough spot for this Met team. That base hit last night that gives them a two, that gives them an 8-2 lead, and his defense and what he brought you last year. And yes, he's not a great hitter. He's hitting around 200. He's got 20 something RBIs. He's not been the same player he was last year. But in big time moments, Tyrone Taylor has been really good for this team. And for me, we're establishing things that have been faults for the New York Mets. Obviously, the lineup has come through two out of these three games against the Cubs. You're looking for that to be consistent. Third base, Beatty. Second base should be now McNeil. Center field, Tyrone Taylor. Starting to establish what this lineup should be on an everyday basis. The bullpen. Before we even get to McClain, let's talk about the bullpen. The bullpen in the series, this game, Stanek comes in, gets the final couple outs of that inning where, you know, McClain gives up the three-run home run. And again, he's given a lead. The last thing you want to do is walk people. Even, a rookie like that understands the last thing he wants to do is put guys on the base path when he's got a lead. So he probably pitched a little bit more inside the zone, probably went after contact a little bit more. I thought he pitched really well. Obviously, the 11 strikeouts for a career high. He was electric at times, but he didn't want to walk people. At least that's how I'm taking it. And he gave up some home runs. I'm not excusing them. And the line overall doesn't end up being that great in 5 1/3 and giving up five runs. But he pitched well enough, especially with the lead. Last thing you want to do is walk people. But the game gets close. The bullpen that has been such a disaster for this team at times, no doubt. And you could say the same thing about the Yankees figuring out their bullpen. But this Met team, the bullpen, Stanek, who was one of your better relievers in the postseason last year, is starting to come on. He gets big outs in the sixth inning. Brooks Raley has been great for this team. He's been unbelievable. And you kind of look at him as a guy you absolutely trust. Helsley has done a much better job after kind of stabilizing his disastrous season. Rogers, who's been, you know, not as good as you had hoped and not pitching to the 1 point whatever ERA had in San Francisco, but he's starting to figure it out. And you know what the closer is and how great Diaz is, who comes in again and shuts down the door. And while I don't know how confident you are in a bullpen, and certainly in a bullpen that's going to be stretched if they go into the postseason or even the next three games because Diaz pitched a lot, and the starting pitching for Saturday and Sunday are kind of up in the air, and you don't know how many innings this bullpen's going to have to give you. but at least the bullpen came in, and it's done a pretty good job here in this series. The offense, 2 out of 3 games, does a really good job in the series. The bullpen does a really good job in the series. And you're starting to stabilize the team a little bit as they head to Miami for 3 of the biggest games. And that's really it. Like, we'll get to the details of the game. You can call me up at 888-808-1019. The big home run from Beatty, I think a huge single in the first inning to get you that second run from Nimmo. The big hit from Taylor to make it 6-8, which becomes critical into a game that becomes 8-5. The offense did a good job. The offense did a good job. The bullpen did a good job. And they were able to get off the deck. But the thing about this team is, whenever you think they do it, whenever you think they're about to have that moment where they turn it around and they find some stability, they're unable to do it. They can't do, obviously, with their season on the line for these 3 games. As we saw Cincinnati win earlier in the day, they kept pace. They still have control of their lives. All they have to do is go win 3 games in Miami, and it won't matter what the hell happens in Cincinnati or Arizona. But you can't have the letdown that you had coming off the San Diego series. That is typical Mets. That is exactly what this group has been. Would take 2 out of 3 against the good San Diego Padres team, fighting for their division, fighting for their spot inside the wild card. Had a chance to try and catch the Cubs and get home series in the wild card, or at times, you know, right then and there, probably still had a chance to possibly catch the Dodgers and now clinch the division. Like, you take on the Michael Kings of the world and the San Diego Padres, and you find ways to win 2 out of 3, and then you roll into a series against the Washington Nationals where you have to handle business. You score 12 in the first game and then lose 2 out of 3. That can't happen in Miami. It can't happen. You've got to take winning 2 out of 3 against the Cubs, getting your fate back in your hands, because heading into the series, you didn't have it. Heading into the series, the fate belonged to the Cincinnati Reds. It is back. You have done a good enough job to take the first 2 out of 3 against the Cubs, and you've won control of your season back, won control of your destiny back, and all you have to do is go take on a very talented, or I shouldn't say very talented, a talented but very spunky kind of Miami team that just got eliminated from the playoffs. You got to give them credit. They have been really good since June. They've been very good since June. They have their pitching set up to take on the Mets. They brought Alcantara back. They got Perez going the next day. They are lined up. Mets pitching is a, who knows, you'll get Sproat tonight. Saturday, you're going to get some form of either Manaea or Clay Holmes. I don't know if there's a chance they split them up for the Sunday game, but, you know, one of those two are going to pitch Saturday. I don't know what's happening Sunday. You can't throw Peterson, I wouldn't think. So they're not in a, they're not in the best of spots, but they're playing a team they're better than. They're playing a team that, you know, they have to figure out a way to exercise the demons. They kind of did it last year with Atlanta, right? You get the rainouts, you get the doubleheader in Atlanta, a team that obviously has been the dominant force for how many years inside the division, right? During the 90s, forget about it. But even, you know, despite this season and how bad they were, over the last handful of years, they've owned the division. They came from behind. This isn't, it's been a long thing with the Atlanta Braves, but it's also been the last, you know, 22, they came up and snuck up and took the division. And so the Mets went into that doubleheader last year, needing to exercise some demons against the Atlanta Braves, and they did it. And they had that crazy, wild, take the lead, blow it, come from behind, Lindor with the big home run, and they win that first game of the doubleheader to secure their playoff spot and kind of exercise the demons. Well, here against Miami, 3 games to find a way into the postseason where I don't care what you say, anything can happen. And they've got to find a way. And I know it's 100 years ago and none of these players were on either of these teams, but you have got to find a way to exercise the demons of 07 and 08, exercise the demons of not being able to take care of business inside the division, not being able to take care against lesser teams, not being able to keep momentum after winning a big series that you desperately needed. This Met team has 3 games to make sure they don't accomplish one of the worst, one of the worst. And I know it's, as we're talking about every team in the division, the Yankee broadcast gave out some stat that it's the first time since in the wild card era or something like this. It's the first time since they went to three divisions in each league, which is the same thing as the wild card era. But anyway, it's the first time since they went to three divisions in each league that every single division is going to have at least one team that blew at least a 5.5 game lead. Every single division in Major League Baseball this year had a team that had a 5.5 game lead and blew it, including the Mets. Including the Mets. So it's been a topsy-turvy. I know it's, you know, the Tigers are absolutely blowing a 15-game lead. So when you say collapse, it has new meaning in 2025 Major League Baseball. But this team was securely in a playoff spot since April 5th. This team on June 13th had the best record in baseball. They have the highest payroll. They added Juan Soto. They have Lindor, 30-30, and they have a 30-30 player in Lindor, just hit his 30th home run last night. A 30-30 player in Juan Soto with 43 home runs, 100 RBIs, and having a 900 OPS. They got Pete Alonso and his 36 or 37 home runs and his 120 RBIs. You can't lose a playoff spot to the Cincinnati Reds because you couldn't beat the Miami Marlins. It can't happen. They have three games to avoid one of the worst collapses in franchise history. They have three games to figure out how not to do something even this Met franchise hasn't done. A disaster of epic proportions to watch the Cincinnati Reds go take on the Dodgers instead of the Mets while they sit at home. It can't happen. Three games. They've got their young stud on the mound tonight in Sproat. They're going to have to figure out the starting rotation, and this offense is going to have to do something that it really hasn't done much of in the second half of the season or really all year long. String together a bunch of games where they score runs. A game here, a game there, the first game of the Washington series, you know, the bookends of this series. Find a way to consistently score some runs. Because you know, like, I can't ask the starting pitching to get it done. I can ask that tonight. But I don't know what's happening Saturday and Sunday. This team knows what Saturday and Sunday brings. They know what the starting pitching has been. This offense has got to find a way to score a ton of runs. They're better than Miami. They're better than Cincinnati. And this team belongs in the postseason, and we got three games to figure it out. And last night went a long way into securing the idea that they control their destiny. And I don't know what Cincinnati is going to do against the best team in the National League, the Brewers. The Brewers aren't playing for anything, but they have a long break. I'm sure they're going to throw their starting pitchers because you don't want to go too long without throwing your guys. So they're going to throw their starting pitchers. They're going to play to win. We'll see exactly how they treat it. But it doesn't matter. They don't have to worry about what's going on in Cincinnati if they handle their business. Figure out a way to beat the Marlins. Figure out a way to score some runs. Figure out a way to get 27 outs a night and get yourself into this wild card postseason where anything can happen. McClain, game one of a postseason series, you're telling me the Mets can't win that game? And if you win one game in the wild card, are you telling me you can't win another? Anything can happen. You have to get there. Last night was a big game for the Mets, a lot of clutch moments. It solidified the bullpen a little bit, at least in my eyes. I feel a little bit better about the bullpen. I feel like the roster solidified itself. Beatty, your everyday third baseman. McNeil, your everyday second baseman. Taylor, your everyday center fielder. You know what your team is. You know what the best version of this team is. The bullpen's starting to pitch better. You've got a young, good starting pitcher who I don't believe Miami has seen yet in Sproat. And you got to figure out a way to get outs on Saturday and Sunday. And this offense, filled with a bunch of guys who make a ton of money. You have the highest paid first baseman. You've got the highest contract in the history of freaking sports. You got a $300 million shortstop. Go out there and get it done. Get it done. 888-808-1019. And then in the Bronx, we'll have three games against the Baltimore Orioles, three games for the division. Who you got? You got the Yankees or you got the frauds? Which one are you behind? I know who I'm behind. Three games. Tied for the division, the Yankees have to be a game better. They've got a tough pitching matchup with Rodgers. They saw him earlier in the week. He's been the best pitcher in baseball, arguably, since the All-Star break. That's how good he's been. And there's three games to decide whether or not they're hosting, which they clinched last night with their victory over the White Sox and their sweep of the White Sox and their five-game winning streak. They have now solidified that, at worst, the game one of the wild card will be played at Yankee Stadium Tuesday night. They have secured the home field advantage in that series, and they are looking to become the AL East champion, the number one seed in the American League, and telling the rest of the American League, the pennant runs through the Bronx. Three games for the Mets to save their lives, three games for the Yankees to set themselves up best way possible to go try and capture number 28. 888-808-1019. We'll get to the football as well, as obviously for the New York Giants, the Jackson Dart era starts. We are there. We're on the first level. We are right there. We saw this before a long time ago. Yeah, Daniel Jones came in that game against Tampa. But, I mean, you have to go back to the Eli Manning era. This is the beginning of what hopes to be a new generation of Giants football, because it needs a changing. It needs a changing. He met for 10 hours with him? 888-808-1019. So we'll get to the football. It is a football Friday. We'll have our picks. We'll have our take a chance parlay. We'll do all of that. We'll have some fun. We will get to the football, but we got to start with the baseball. This is pennant race baseball, man. The Mets have three games against the Miami Marlins to save their lives, and we have seen that before, and it has not gone well. We got three games for the Yankees to try and win a division and be the one seed in the American League and set themselves up for a postseason run. Three games, a weekend. Then we got Giants and Jets as well. What a crazy weekend. I love this time of year.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey everyone, it's Boomer and Geo, and if you're into New York sports or you want straight talk about what's really going on in the sports world, Boomer and Geo is your show.
We're covering it all. Yankees wins, Giants drama, national headlines, and whatever chaos the day brings on the field and off.
No filler, no filters, just real conversation, and believe me, plenty of laughs every weekday morning.
We don't hold back, and we don't waste your time. We get to what actually matters.
That's Boomer and Geo, and you can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.